Welcome to the Sheer Life podcast, where we discuss what it takes as women to optimize mind, body, and soul for you to live your best life.
So we're talking about adapting exercise with when we have injury or pain. And this is really relevant because I've noticed that a lot of times what happens is that people come in and it's like, oh, I'm injured, and then suddenly I can't do anything. And what happens when we think of movement that way is we end up sort of derailing ourselves. We end up having these long periods of time where we don't exercise, and also it slows down the recovery process often. So pain and injury does not mean you have to stop moving. So I'll use an example of injuring myself. I like tore the ligaments in my ankle a while back, a few years ago now, the first time I did it. And people were surprised that like the week after I did it, like I was still on crutches, but I was in the gym. And because it's during the recovery process, I could spend months whilst I'm recovering and doing rehab. And it's going to take time before I can load the ankle and before I can properly rehab that. But I have a full rest of the body that still needs to move and needs to train. So we need to stop thinking of pain and injury as like it's the thing that stops me from doing everything and my whole progress is going to be derailed. And instead, sort of reframe it. And I like to think of pain and injuries as an opportunity to find a new way of doing things. So if we can think of injury as what is the universe and my body trying to teach me, then it can be a really great opportunity rather than a roadblock that stops us from making progress. There are going to be times where we have an initial injury and rest may be needed. So for example, when I did my ankle, it blew up and I torn the ligaments. There are a few days where it's like really swollen and very tender. And the initial injury, it may be that it does need some rest. So if you've just had a back spasm, the first day or two, you may need to just not do anything and just sort of be really gentle with it and listen to your body. If you've had a broken bone or you're like, you need actual, like there's proper physical trauma, something's broken, you may need to, like, you can't just magically hope that a broken bone is going to fix itself. Like, we need to take medical intervention. But often what happens then is we use that, like, I've got a broken bone now for 8 to 12 weeks, I can't do anything. But the reality is once we've had the bone set or the surgery and we've got a cast on, then there are still ways that we can move and continue making progress. So I always check in, like, have I taken the initial support that my body needs to make sure that I'm in the right place? Have I been to seek the support that I need? Do I need to see a doctor? Do I need to see some other type of specialist? That may be the case. Is there excessive swelling? Is there something as a physical trauma that requires that support? But also keep in mind that often people rest longer than is necessary. For example, with a sprained ankle, actually moving the joint as soon as possible is helpful in the recovery process. So the old acronym RICE, rest, ice, compression, elevation, which is what most of us learned when we were younger for when there's like a sprain. These days, the research is not supporting that. These days, it's saying, okay, so we need to try and move the joint as much as possible within reason. You're not going to do it so much that it's like massively swelling up. But for example, within a day or two, we want to try and get nice big joint articulations, slowly start loading the joint as much as you can, again, within reason. And that's going to actually help the recovery process. And we often think of swelling and that inflammation as a negative thing, but that's actually part of the healing process. That's the body trying to bring all the nutrients that it needs to heal that trauma. So sometimes we think of these things like, oh my God, my foot's swollen. Like, yes, we don't want it so swollen that like we can't like load it and stuff, but also being aware that those are part of the healing process and it's something that we need to allow and be able to work with. With any type of injury or pain, we're going to begin moving cautiously. And like I said, remember that pain is one way your body communicates its needs with you. That inflammation is part of the healing process, but we also want to be able to feel when there is pain, because if we can't feel it, we're not going to know when we've gone too far. I always suggest, like, if you can't train or move without taking painkillers, then that's a good indication that it's maybe too much too soon. I usually recommend trying to avoid painkillers at any time before training. I'm only taking painkillers like at times when you're at rest, because even in day-to-day life, if you're taking painkillers just to get around, you'll be doing things thinking you feel fine, but you're not actually able to feel when your body's going, oh, that's one step too far. I like personally, I think of like if the pain's bad and I can't sleep and it's affecting my rest and recovery, I'll take painkillers at night. But if I can function during the day without painkillers, I want to do that so that I can feel when my body's saying this is too much or I need you to move because this doesn't feel like a good position for me. It's really important that we trust that your body is resilient and it will heal. Because if you go into like I'm injured and suddenly it's the end of the world and nothing is going to go right, your recovery process is going to be painful and long. But if we can trust that our body is resilient and will heal, our experience of the recovery process will be different and will often be much faster. For example, I think I told you in one of the other coaching calls, one of my friends fractured her spine and literally within weeks was doing stuff that people couldn't believe she was doing. But she was very careful about doing all of these things, beginning with very cautious movement, trusting her body, listening when there was pain. And she was so confident that her body is resilient and was going to heal. Within like 7 to 8 weeks, she was doing stuff that like most people like can't do in their normal, like ever. But after a spine fracture, like it's absolutely insane. If we have that belief that our body is going to heal and is resilient, and we've taken these sort of initial support from any medical professionals that we might need, and then we're actually ready to be training. So for example, this could look like if it's something like I've just sprained my ankle, you can probably get into the gym right away. You're just going to adapt the exercises. If it's like I've just got, for example, my back was feeling twingy this week. So I've trained every day still. I haven't changed anything. I haven't not trained. I've just adapted the exercises that I'm doing. So there may be that there's no time that you need to take off. Or if it's like a serious injury, there may be a period of time where you need to take off. You have to have surgery. You have to have a block of time. And then you'll have your, you know, physio initial rehab stage, and then you get to come back into the gym. But within that, there's always things that you can be doing. So the return to training will vary in time frame and in specificity depending on the injury. So the answer to most questions is it depends. So we want to choose exercises that don't irritate the injury when it isn't specific rehab movements. So for example, if I have an ankle injury, I'll use my example of when I did my ankle. When I was training in all of my training that wasn't stuff about rehabbing the ankle, I chose adaptions that didn't load and hurt make the ankle feel at any way in risk. So it meant I did a lot of seated exercises. I did things where I could support the ankle with like my knee supported rather than putting my foot on the floor. I did things like machine exercises so I could train my legs without loading my ankle on the ground. And then at the same time, I was doing things like writing the alphabet with my foot and then seeing how long I could I stand on the foot and put more weight on the foot until like for a minute, maybe trying to load the joint and all the supporting muscles. And then over time I would build that up. Can I work on the range of motion on the ankle? And then once the ankle was ready for loading, then I could go, maybe I'll do an adapted squat variation that won't put so much weight on the ankle. So I can still train lots and lots of things, but I'm going to be careful that I'm not irritating the injury at the same time. Ask yourself these questions. What does the original movement do? Which joints move and which muscles are working? So these are the things that we want to think about when we're changing, if we're adapting a workout. So for example, what's the original movement do? Which joints move and which muscles are working? So we're going to use a few examples here. If the original exercise is a split squat, then how would I adapt that if someone has a foot injury, an ankle injury? Yeah. So I have, for example, one client who's got a big toe injury and she can't do toe flexion. So she's fine in a squat where her foot's flat, but if she has to have her toe go like this on the foot behind her, it's like agonizing. So what options can we give her then? I'm going to think about what does the original exercise do? The original exercise, the split squat, is essentially a unilateral single leg squat variation. Yeah. So I'm using my knee and my ankle flexion, knee, ankle, and hip flexion. I'm using a quad dominant movement, still using hamstrings and glutes. So I want to try and find an exercise that's going to give me a similar adaption. So I could do risk of injury, of making the other thing worse, or being really uncomfortable for her. So then we use the same example for a barbell back squat. If someone's got a bar on their back and they've done beautiful squats, but suddenly they've got a ankle or a knee injury, and they can't load one of their legs. So one of the things I did when I did my ankle, so I've done the initial thing, I can load the ankle again a little bit, but I've got to build trust and confidence in that joint again before I can load it with a lot of weight. So what I would start with is doing a squat where I'm holding a TRX or rings, so I can use some of my body weight to support me as I go down in a squat. And as I'm doing that, I'm thinking about my weight staying even, still trying to feel, can my ankle take this range of motion? And you're going to just the place where you're feeling supported in that range of motion with that joint within what is possible for it. Now, it may take a few weeks before you feel like you've got full range of motion and you feel safe with body weight. Once they've built up to body weight, then we could go, okay, do we want to try loading it with a bit more weight? But maybe the range of motion of a full squat is too much. So I can do a squat with my butt touching a box where it's going to take less range of motion in the ankle. That way I can start loading with weight on my spine and weight on the body, but without the same degree of flexion, which is going to feel like a little bit unstable in the beginning. So we're going to find those progressions of like, where is my body feel safe now? And how do I just bring it that tiny little bit further without it being any chance of risk? And it's like that building that confidence back with the body. Then I put in the semi-kneeling single arm press as an example, because every type of exercise, we want to have these progressions and regressions based on What was the initial exercise trying to achieve? What are the joints and the muscles that are being used? And then how do I adapt to get that same thing without risking the initial injury? So the semi-kneeling single arm press was a movement I couldn't do yesterday morning. My back was feeling so janky that if I was in the semi-kneeling press position and I pressed, I was getting this like shooting nerve pain down my leg and down my back. Super painful. So for me being in that semi-kneeling position, it was putting too much shearing on my torso and on my core for me to stabilize. So the single arm press, it's a core stability and a single arm exercise, yeah? It's a seated press exercise. Now, I can make it easier by making it a seated single arm press. That's going to take out some of the instability in the core. So I did seated. I'm still using the same muscles and joints. So my core is still having to stabilize, but it's taken out some of the difficulty of that. I'm using the exact same muscles to press and the same joints, but I've taken out that challenge. Now, if someone's then really still struggling to brace their core, we could make it as supported. So we're on a high bench where we're leaning. Then we've got the support of the bench to make sure that there's no pain. That would make it easy again, but we're still using the same essentially joints and same movement pattern. And or it could be something like a standing single arm press where someone just feels like they're more supported when they're fully standing. Again, all of these adaptations will depend on what the injury or the pain is. And we're always taking it back to what was I trying to achieve with the initial exercise? And can I find an adaption that's going to get me a similar, find an alternative that's going to give me this a similar adaption to what the initial exercise was trying to achieve, but without any risk of injury or pain? It's really, really important. I want to bring it back to belief and action. Believing that your body is capable and will give you the information required at the same time as seeking options to get moving as soon as possible with the most support available is key to fast recovery. So if we don't believe that we're going to recover quickly, we won't. If we don't take action to start the recovery process and seek as much support as possible, it's also going to really slow down the recovery process. So part of the community that we have is like, we have a really strong support network. A lot of people lack that, but you can have beautiful support, but go into a spiral of like, this is the end of my life and I'm going to be injured forever and I'll never be as fit as I was. Or you can just say, well, this is an opportunity for me to learn a new way of moving and a new way of caring for my body at this time, and you'll recover much, much faster. Now it's time for you guys to ask questions or thoughts or notice things that came up for you when you listened to that.
Overstimulated, or they still will get talkative, like I like to call it. But I remember at that particular point in time, it was a Saturday and we were doing our conditioning class and I couldn't even do a burpee because they'd got to a stage where they were just not coming to the party. And the next day after that, they seized fully and I could barely even sit on the toilet. So I basically followed exactly what Jess said now, because I'm not like a big fan of like over-medicating so that I don't know what my body is saying, because it was just speaking to me by bit being so hard to sit on the toilet. So I immediately canceled plans to go to a wedding or whatever I had to do, rested, took a Voltaren only so that I could sleep that night, and then promptly went off to the physio. And the entire time I let the physio know what I did in training, and I let Jesse know what the physio was telling me to do. And Jesse was super supportive in saying like, okay, fine. At this point, come in, don't do deadlift day. Come in and we'll do, keep up with your upper body work, and just adapting the workouts for me so that I could still train, but it was completely adapted. And when I did start lifting weights again, the physio said, start at 25% and build back up. And I think that's also like a really important lesson, because who knows, maybe 6 months into it, I was like, oh, I've been strength training for 6 months, I got this. And maybe I was lifting too heavy. Maybe I wasn't bracing well enough. Who knows what was going on, right? But what's really important is the ego. It's always good to have the ego in check and to not give up. So those were two really important lessons I learned 6 months into my journey of training with Shiro. And I'm not saying that my spinal erectors are, and I always said to Jess, I just want to like put on so much muscle mass. I want to be so strong that nothing ever hurts again. And Jess is like, well, it doesn't work like that. You can't train so that nothing will ever hurt in your whole life, but you can absolutely train so that you do build a very robust body, so that when things happen, your body and your mind can deal with it a whole lot better. And so for me today, when my spinal erectors get a little bit, you know, overexcited, overstimulated, when I'm deadlifting, the belt super helps me, and or I'm very mindful of what I do the next day, or if it's just before my period. So they've come such a long way. They don't hurt at the drop of a hat like they used to before, but it definitely has been a 2 year, now starting a third year journey of moving through that for my own self. And yeah, absolutely everything Jesse said resonates so hard, and it absolutely works. And yeah, that's been my experience till today. So it's not gone, but I can just deal with it so much better.
I'm not just right. She loved the keep the ego in check phase. Yeah.
I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned is that it's not the end of the world. And you know that so well, Jesse. I think like, if I think back to all of the times where I've been like really engaged in training, really focused on my health, and it's happened so many times now at this point that I can't even count, I think, on one hand. And like, for instance, in boot camp and CrossFit and whatever, where I've been hurt and I'll just stop everything, and actually the spiral downwards, like mentally, is probably the worst part of it, right? And yeah, over the last 2 years, I've had a few little, not really injuries, I suppose the ankle and knee was an injury, but like more like niggles and things like that. And you've always been so like supportive and understanding and saying, no, well, you need to come back because you need to, like, it's not your whole body, it's one little area of your body, and you need to, you know, like just think ahead. And yeah, that has been life changing.
Sorry. Yeah. And I love like both of the things that like Marita just said, keeping the ego in check, and what you've just said, it's not the end of the world, is both of those things, if you sort of take it away from the lens of just training, is you'll probably notice that there are times in your life where there's suddenly a setback and you go, fuck it. And so training is just a place where these beliefs we have about ourselves show up. And it's an opportunity for us to go, okay, I'm going to interact with this belief differently.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So powerful.
Thank you, Jesse. Bow down.
No, it's awesome. And it has been a massive shift for you. Like watching you in the past when there was an injury and like you said, that spiral in comparison to like your experience in most recently, it's like such a huge shift. It's really, really awesome to watch.
Last month is when I did a deadlift wrong, and then my back gave out, and being a heavier person, that's disaster for someone like me, you know. And then I spent the half the month under the infrared light, and you know, taking as little painkillers as possible. I usually don't take those things, but a lot of patches on my back and lots of Voltaren, all of these things. And where the shift really happened, and this was, you know, the pain the pain I think was going down, but the pain in my head was not going down. You know, it felt like, oh, I'm 41 years old now, and this is going to be my life, and that's all it is. You know, it is the end of the world. My ego is not stopping, you know. And then I also had to travel after that and for work. And then this one phone call, I call Jessie and I go, I can't move. My life sucks. And she goes, move, start moving, you know. And I'm like, but that's the opposite of everything I know about having an injury. And that reminder was so necessary, because what was interesting is that I had problems sitting and standing the duration during, but when I'm walking, there was no pain. It was bizarre. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't make sense to me. So I did travel, and during my travels, I kept walking. I tried to have as less sort of seated, or, you know, and then eventually when I would lie down, I'd make sure that my back was warm and, you know, all of those things without getting into painkillers. And truly, it made all the difference. And difference, not just in the sense that I'm feeling better now, but it shifted my mind. It was more a mindset thing that has been changed for me. The pain is gone. I have a little bit that I have to work through. But definitely the movement thing is so important, and finding alternatives. So usually, and I have had back spasms before in my life as well. And after back spasm, easily I put on about 5 kilos. That's my trend. This time, I had the back spasm somewhere on May 7th or 10th, and went 15 days lying down, then went to travel to 2 countries, then had COVID. And when I got back to the gym this Monday, I'd already lost another 3 kilos. So for me, that's actually a win, because usually it's easy for me to just put on the weight. So yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, guys. And definitely, it's not the end of the world. And speaking to my body to that we can work beyond it. Jessie, what you said about doing an alternative exercise. So I would be sitting, unable to move my back, but then I would do arm exercises. I would do leg exercises, you know, just without any weights, just me and my legs, you know, doing some basics, a combination of yoga and circus. But, you know, and then it was good. Yeah, it was good. Thank you. Thank you.
No, thank you for sharing. And I love that, like, what you noticed this time is like your the time it takes you to come back will get shorter and shorter the more you learn the lesson. So there's multiple layers to it. It's like the first time you get a back spasm and you're like, oh my God, it's the end of the world, I'm broken. And then it might take you a month before you build that trust back and come back. For me now, I'm like, oh, that feels a bit janky. And I will just adapt to what I'm doing that day. I will go, well, multiple factors, like, do I need support in other areas? Is this related to emotional things that are going on? Is there other things that are present here? Do I have energy that needs to move? Is it that I need a massage? And I need to support myself in that way. And I'm going to train in any way that I can that doesn't cause me pain.
Oh, and my God. Sometimes it was absolutely a mental thing, because I was, I gave myself this back pain so that I could avoid taking on a very big project that I was supposed to do. I know it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or mental.
Yeah. I love that recognition, because the thing is, then eventually you're going to go, ooh, like, I noticed my back's been tender this week, and I'm like, what is it that I'm not sitting with? Like, is there something here that I'm trying to avoid? And then you get to go, like, okay, I don't want to do the project. Let's just fucking say no to the project instead of suffering in the pain. And again, it's like any other sort of self-development, like, the awareness and the shift will happen faster and faster the more practice that we have.
Actually, for me, it's not actually related to the topic itself, like the injury topic, but I loved when you said that the training is where sometimes internal beliefs can come up. And I could relate it to that, because I remember specifically, like, in the beginning of the training, I would say, like, most of the time I would say, no, I can't do that, or it's not possible, or most of the time the first idea that will come up is that, oh, I can't to mm-hmm. that to do that specific movement. But then I end up like doing the movement or starting like to challenge myself, like specifically with you, like you cannot just say you can't. No, you can. So you always challenge us. So when I get challenged and I go heavier, I have noticed that my mindset started to shift into the different phrase, into like, I'm capable. And this actually affected other aspects of my life. Like training affected other aspects of my life, because now I feel like I'm capable to do other stuff. It's not related to the training itself, but training attributed to that part, like, oh, I'm capable to do stuff because I could have done that in the training. So it's just like, I love that how training.
Thank you for listening to the Shira Life podcast. If this was helpful or interesting to you, please share and subscribe so that more people can hear about what we are doing and sharing. We really appreciate all of your support. Until next time, goodbye.